Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I am so excited that for 2024, Your Brand Amplified is proudly sponsored by one of my favorite platforms, Simplified. This AI-driven platform is a game changer for design and video content. With Simplified, I can effortlessly transform lengthy videos, such as my podcast, into engaging, shareable clips and streamline workflows with an intuitive subtitle generator. For designers out there, you can explore the AI-powered image generator, create compelling presentations, and design eye-catching YouTube thumbnails with ease. Revolutionize your creative process at Simplified.com with a free trial. Now let's dive into today's guest.
Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference.
There is a lot of hype about the topic today and a lot of people who aspire to do exactly what Kayla Ehrig is doing, which is to be a digital nomad. And Kayla, you've written the book, How to Be a Digital Nomad, Build a Successful Career While Traveling the World. Who doesn't want to do that? Thank you for being here and kind of helping us understand what it really means to be a digital nomad, how you became one, and what people really need to think about if that's what they're looking for in their life.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm so excited. It's such a hot topic, but it's a topic that nobody kind of, there's still so much misconception about it. I guess maybe that's anything. Like, you like having a baby and you think, I had no idea it was like this. Like, maybe it's just normal life, but there's so much to dive into.
There really is. And for those of you who are watching, Kayla is sitting in a kitchen of, I believe, probably an Airbnb somewhere. Hopefully she'll tell us where. But I asked her to keep the background on because I wanted to show that she is authentically, like, living this life.
I'm so glad you see it that way, because sometimes I feel bad that other people have this, like, beautiful office setup. And of course, I have that Pinterest board, trust me. Yeah. But I don't have an apartment, so I live out of Airbnbs. And yeah, this is my reality. I go wherever the lighting's best. And here in this apartment in Athens, the kitchen wins. So here I am.
And you've been on the road since 2017. So, Pete, first tell us, because you also are a marketer, you're a writer, you do SEO work, you do a lot of other, you know, freelance writing. So can you talk about your career path a little bit and then what inspired you to take it on the road?
My career path had a big major squiggle in it, if you think about that, like, path to success. You know, it's like not the straight line going up, everyone thinks. I was working in marketing, doing graphic design for an architecture firm in Chicago in 2017. Cool. And I was fresh out of school still. I'd only been working. I mean, I started that job like almost exactly 1 year after I graduated with my bachelor's. And my last year of college really put me in this headspace of kind of, I don't know, intensity with life. Like, my final year of college, 7 people in my life died.
Oh my God.
And it was very random. Some of it was like cancer, heart attack, that's normal. And then there was like one of my aunts got hit by a car walking out of work. And my dad, two family members on my dad's side of the family died in a plane crash. Ow. And then I entered the working world, like, well, traumatized. That's a lot of loss and grief in a period of time. And then I felt like, you know, it almost be worth it because you have this amazing career and it must be so satisfying to have like a job that you love. And I don't know, to me, that was like, was going to make it all so worth it. And I didn't feel that in the working world. I felt like a lot of people were waiting all day for 5 p.m., waiting all week for the weekend, all year for vacation. And I was terrified of that. I thought I might get hit by like an asteroid tomorrow. So I need to like it now. So I found freelance writing work, took a big pay cut, but I also reduced my expenses majorly, which is a part of the travel lifestyle. And yeah, I bought a one-way ticket out of the U.S. and I really didn't have a plan. I mean, I had income, I had some savings. It wasn't like a huge, it felt very risky, but I had the safety nets in place and I had no plan for what was going to happen. And I've been abroad now most of the time ever since. And that feels like a lifetime ago. That was whenever I was 24 and now I turned 30 last year. And it
whole
feels
new decade, yeah.
Whole new thing, yeah.
And I think a lot of people think about it as really glamorous, as kind of the influencer lifestyle, right? I mean, I know a lot of people who do travel influencing, and it's usually they get free trips. They're not necessarily getting paid for it. But you've been able to incorporate getting paid with being able to travel and see the world. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that. How have you been able to maintain those client relationships? Because being in different time zones, I know, like last summer, I tried to work from France and I went to a place that I thought had Wi-Fi, but it had a hotspot that didn't really work. So I know that there can be a lot of challenges when you have this lifestyle, and you said you didn't really have a plan. You had your safety net set up. You went on the road. Where was the first place you went, and how did you navigate these challenges that could present themselves?
I started in Mexico because I had never been to Mexico, and I felt like you can't see the world if you don't see your neighbor. I'm from the U.S., so that felt like a natural starting point. And I don't think it's that different, actually, working as a digital nomad if you've ever worked remotely. So I think that a lot of those learning curves that, let's say, a lot of people went through during the pandemic, you have overcome those already. Like having to learn how to be disciplined and stick to a schedule. And if you've ever freelanced, then you have been through it. Like, you know, you have to think, like, you have to go out, like, hunt for your food. Like, it's not provided, you know? I feel like that's kind of like the groceries, like having a job is like going to the grocery store, like a salary, and it's all set. But freelancing, you're like used to having to hustle differently. So if you've done those things, I don't think it's all that different than doing it on the road, but it does take a lot more proactivity, like the Wi-Fi. Like, you couldn't have arrived in France and then had this big deadline 2 days later because you would have.
Which I did. Oh, no. Yeah. So
did you make it?
I turned in part of it. I turned in what I could, but it all ended up working out. But it was definitely a hiccup something I'd not anticipated. And I work remotely, but I hadn't thought through of course they're going to have great Wi-Fi. You know?
Yeah. And then people mistakenly think that the Netherlands, I had a home base in the Netherlands for a few years, 2018 to 2023. And use that to travel. And people think Netherlands, it's like hyper developed, it's super densely populated. I mean, like technology, money, it's like very well funded. And no, we had Wi-Fi issues all the time in our apartment. So you can't make any assumptions, which is hard because you let your guard down, you get comfortable, you know, like you were used to working remotely. So you felt like, you know, the drill, but somehow you like never know the whole. It's like there's always something that could go wrong that you never anticipated. Like the power goes out. And like, I didn't plan for that. And it's just life, but it's still funny and it's stressful whenever you're somewhere different.
Yeah. Well, there are such clear reasons that you decided to enjoy life while you saw all these things happen around you, right? And you realized how precious it is. But can you take us a little back to what is the history of the digital nomad movement? And when did it start? And, you know, how did people, like, do you have groups where you can go and find out information from other people who are living this lifestyle?
No, it's such a fun story. It's actually like a pretty, old movement. I don't want to use the word old and refer to the 80s, but it started in the 80s as soon as computers were portable. And I actually found the first digital nomad and interviewed him for my book. His name's Stephen K. Roberts.
Wow.
And he set out with like the first really portable computer on a bike. And he was biking and camping, and he would send his art. He was a writer. He's still around. I don't really speak about him in past tense, but back then he was writing, and he would send his articles through a payphone using this device that it's called an acoustic coupler. And it had like suction cups that would go on a payphone receiver. And it would kind of, I'm probably butchering this explanation, but it kind of like Morse code it to a fax machine, I think.
Wow.
And then it would like spit out his articles. And he maintained this whole, like, for 10 years he did this, and his clients didn't even know he was traveling. And I think if you do it well, people forget that you're traveling. And my clients, they're like, you're back in the US, you're gone. They never remember. And I want it to be that way, because it should be like as reliable and as, you know, seamless as if I was in the cubicle next to them. But yeah, he was kind of kicked off the silent start of this whole movement. And I found people and interviewed them for my book through every decade. So he was the 80s. I found someone who was doing this in the 90s in the age of dial-up internet, living traveling around in an RV with a big computer.
Oh, gosh.
He would go door to door and ask people. He would like knock on people's doors. His name's Rob Palmer. And he would ask people, do you have internet? And can I use it for a little while?
My gosh,
and
pay? Yes.
And if they said yes, then they would string their, like, I mean, who remembers that sound, that dial-up internet
sound?
I was like, I won't do it, but If you're of that era, then you know the sound. Yeah, and they would string the cord out of their house and into the window of his RV. And then he would work for an hour or two, and then... It's just so funny. And then the 2000s was like internet cafes, and now it's Wi-Fi and smartphones, and now it's like, you know, so the tools are so obvious to us, but it has a really rich history. But of people all feeling the same way, I don't want to sit in a cubicle all day. Nothing wrong with that at all. But if you don't want to be doing that, and you see that there's another option, then you're like, where's the little hammer to break the glass? And, you know, it's like break glass in case of emergency. Like, I want to get out of here and do something different.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And just for everybody who's listening or watching, I have a copy of the book. I haven't read it yet because I really like these interviews to be fresh and being able to come up with questions I wouldn't have come up with if I'd read it, because I'd already know the information that my audience might not know. So just wanting to level set there for you, Kayla, because I really appreciate that you sent it to me and I'm really looking forward to reading it. So I want to know, you started before the pandemic, before everybody else had to go fully digital for those years, and you were living this lifestyle during the pandemic, and you said that was when you were using the Netherlands as a base.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was that experience like, and how have things shifted from when you first started to having a consistent home base that you traveled from to now it sounds like you have taken another leap to somewhere else?
Right. So much has changed with the pandemic. That's the final milestone that I identified in all of my research of this movement, because the tools have been around for a really long time. I mean, decades, the tools have been here to work remotely for a lot of roles. And finally, culture caught up, where people who never thought they would ever dream of wanting to work remotely or think that they could, they realize I can do a lot of this at home. And then people hopefully were home long enough to learn to enjoy it, because I did feel like at first I felt like the whole kind of remote work movement took a bit of a step back because people hated it, because it was traumatizing. Like, 2020 was a traumatizing year, and if you were all of a sudden alone all the time, or it was just, it didn't necessarily make you feel good about working remotely, but a lot of technology and companies and people were thought, oh, realize like, oh, it's actually so much more doable than I thought. So that was extremely positive. Yeah, some travelers got really stuck with the pandemic. I thankfully was not in that situation. So I had a residence visa in the Netherlands. I met my husband traveling in 2017, and then we came and had to hit back to his country of the Netherlands and use that as a home base. And I went through the immigration process there. So I was working online, and actually through my online work, I was able to kind of sponsor myself to become a citizen.
Nice.
There's so many benefits if you're able to be self-employed specifically. There's just so many cool things I can come from. That was one of the unexpected benefits. I got a Dutch passport in March last year. So I thankfully had a home base, but it was extremely weird. I mean, it was really bizarre. The pandemic was bizarre everywhere. It was really interesting to see it through another country, but they were all their decisions. And oh, it was so weird. I have like a hard time remembering almost. I don't know if you feel that way. It's like so foggy and strange. Yeah. And it was like so repetitive as well that you have a hard time.
And then now you all are traveling. So he was also living the digital nomad lifestyle, or?
Whenever I met Brian, he was a high school English teacher, but he would just save up for money for months and then quit and travel as long as he could and then go back and get work again. So we met while I was working online, but he was on one of these trips where he had saved up money. And we traveled together for a couple months. And then at the end of his trip, because he had to go back because he had an apartment that he was subletting, I went back with him. And then that's whenever that kind of chapter of life started. So I haven't been actively nomadic for the entire 6-7 years, but I have been abroad for the majority of that time. Mm-hmm. And he was teaching, but he didn't even have Wi-Fi whenever we met.
Oh, no.
So 2017, that's behind.
Yeah.
So the digital nomad thing was very foreign to him. And he also didn't like the idea of it. Like, he didn't like the idea of having to combine work and travel. He thought that was like, you traveled to get away from work, But whenever he saw that I was able to make money and my flexibility, he was very open to it. And he learned to write. And now we run our business together. Awesome. So he has learned SEO and content writing. And it's pretty fun. It's been a really big transition. And now we're fully nomadic again. So as soon as I got my Dutch passport, we got rid of all of our stuff and downsized. We left a few boxes with his parents in storage, but that's it. So we're living now. We each have two backpacks and we're traveling out of that. So it's been like 10 months, I think, of drifting around, and we don't have any end date in mind. We don't know where or when we'll stop. We're just enjoying it.
I think that sounds so freeing because we have so much stuff, right? We're so attached to our stuff. But yeah. When you think about what do you usually wear when you in a closet, if you have a one house that you know, is your foundation, how much stuff do we gather that we don't wear? Well, maybe we pull it out once every few years. And so this has really had to make you simplify your lifestyle as well and think about what's really important. If you're only traveling with two backpacks and you're able to go on the road for 10 months, and I'm sure, of course, you can purchase things along the way if you need a new toothbrush or, you know, toiletries or whatever. Yeah. But I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. And how did you figure out what to pare down? And was that difficult for you at first and also for your husband?
Yeah, at first it was hard. So I got rid of my stuff. I got rid of my apartment in 2017 first. And that was hard. I didn't let go of things easily. I put a lot of things in storage at my parents' house. They were really gracious. They're like, yeah, whatever. Just you can leave it down there, you know, down in the basement. But I don't know. I kept that stuff in storage for like 5 years and I never used it. And then whenever I went back and looked at it 5 years later, I was like kind of bummed. I'm like, man, why did you hold on to these like set of IKEA cutlery and this stuff that was not even sentimental? I just thought, well, if I need it, I don't want to buy it again. And it was a fear of not knowing how this new lifestyle would work out. And I thought I'd be embarrassed too if I got rid of everything. And then I came back in 3 months and had to rebuy everything. I thought I would be really embarrassed. And now that I am maybe a little bit older, I think that I'm totally fine with failure now. Like if I fail, it's okay. Back then I thought if I fail, it'll be so embarrassing and everybody will know. And I don't feel that way anymore. So maybe part of that's just, failing enough and getting used to it. But I can appreciate whenever people say I could never get rid of all my stuff. I was right there too. But whenever I put my stuff in storage, a lot of it deteriorated, things broke, all the clothes went out of style. Like it really devalued and I didn't need any of it. That was my experience. And the second time it was easy. We got rid of the whole apartment in 6 weeks and I kept one suitcase of stuff. And if that were to burn down in a home fire, it's in my in-law's house. So that would be devastating. But if that specific suitcase were to disappear, I would not blink. I wouldn't feel bad at all. But my husband as well, he had a lot of collectible books. That was his thing that was hard to let go. Like books that he'd like tracked down, like out of print. So he kept a couple boxes, like 4 boxes of books. And that's all we have. And sometimes it's annoying. Like I just had to buy a new pair of sneakers and I let go of a pair of sneakers like a year ago. I got rid of them, but I didn't need them for a year. So I didn't need them. And now it's like warm enough. I mean, it's still winter kind of in Greece, but it's warm to me. So I think I'm done with boots. It's time for like summer shoes, spring shoes. Okay. I'm not ready for sandals. I would get a lot of looks, but yeah, then you just get what you need and get it secondhand if you can. Like we do that sometimes at Airbnbs. If there's like not a kettle, we like to make coffee with like the electric kettle. If there's not one, then go to thrift store and pick one up for $3.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And let's talk about the budgeting aspect. Because when you went on the road, did you set a budget? Did you know kind of what your expenses would be? Or was it like just on the fly and then you kind of had to figure it out? Because you said that you've had some downfalls. It's not always been like amazing success the whole time. There have been some failures. So I'd love to hear about the budgeting and then about some of the failures that you turned into lessons.
there's been a lot of lessons with budgeting. Budgeting's hard. But I, shifting from life, from what I call normal life, which is life at home with like a car and rent. And I don't say normal life is a neutral term. It's just all the things that come with that. Like I got rid of almost all of my normal life expenses. I didn't have rent. I didn't have a car or car insurance. Like all of these things were gone. And for me living in Chicago, I lived in a studio apartment, but it was still like $1,200 a month. So that's what makes it more affordable if you take that step and you get rid of your home base and you travel full time, which you don't have to do. That's one of four options. And that's the most extreme option. So we can talk about the others. But then I decided to just de-escalate all of my costs. So I like aggressively cut back on spending and I learned how to budget my groceries. And then whenever I went traveling, I started doing something called a work exchange, which is where you volunteer your time and stay for free. So I had no expenses in terms. I only had like food expenses. I didn't have to pay for an Airbnb back then. I was volunteering in exchange for a place to stay and I was earning money. So I actually had a lot more disposable income. And it depends on what you do. There's a lot of ways to change the costs, though. There are so many ways to make it more affordable.
Yeah.
What would you say your biggest expenses are? Would it be making sure that you have a working cell phone and, you know, your phone hotspot if you need it? Or is there something?
Airbnb now is the biggest expense. We budget $1,000 a month for Airbnb. And we usually stay places for a month. So we also get big monthly discounts. So like we were in Croatia over Christmas and that apartment was normally $3,000 a month. But we got it for $1,000 because it had a monthly discount and it was off season. So there's all these kind of little ways. And that, again, like that's not that much different than paying rent.
Right.
It's usually cheaper. It's almost always less than like at $1,200 in Chicago. That for me, I know Chicago is expensive, but it set the bar so high. It was so easy to stay under that, especially in other countries. But freelancing work came and went in the beginning. And I made mistakes where I was like a bit irresponsible. Like I lost my computer charger. I left it behind and I left a hostel at like 4 a.m. to catch a bus and I left my computer charger behind and then I missed a freelancing deadline and that was devastating and that was my only client at the time and they were very understanding but you never recoup that impression that you and I didn't know them that well either so that was something that I still feel bad about. It was okay but still you never recover from disappointing somebody.
Yeah,
I actually supplemented for a while. I started nannying whenever I was in the Netherlands. I thought I don't want to find a job here, like a job because then why did I leave Chicago if I'm not becoming more, I'm giving up my independence by getting a job that tethers me to a specific location. So I nannied at kids whose parents wanted them to be exposed to English. So I did that for a while. They didn't speak English. I didn't speak Dutch. That was terrible. But it was enough cash to survive. And it was only a few hours a day or a week. It was like part-time. And then I put all my time into building the freelance work. And that was a gamble, but it did pay off. But it was rough. It was a hustling period. And yeah, it's not fun. It's not always fun. I mean, building your business is never like if anyone tells me that they started a business and it went really well and they never like questioned everything and wanted to cry daily, I don't believe it because it's just hard or everyone would be doing it.
Exactly. And to that point, you said there were four types of being a digital nomad. And the most extreme one is being on the road all the time, which is what you are doing now.
Yes. So that's having no home base. That's the most extreme. So that's type four. I'll start at type one. If you have enough money, you don't have to change anything. You can keep your house. You can keep your car. You don't have to downsize your costs. If you have a dog, you can pay someone to watch them. And then you can say, oh, I want to go away for a week or a month or 6 months. And if you have the money to fill that gap, life can stay the same.
Yeah.
And then type two is that you can downsize and travel more. Like, let's say you want to travel a couple months out of the year. I've met a lot of people like this, people who have seasonal jobs, people who work in like archaeology. That is a seasonal job. These are things that people that you meet on the road. So they have a smaller home with smaller expenses, and then they would be gone for months out of the year and kind of use that. So kind of an in-between stage of living minimally at home, but then having a lot of transferring those funds to long-term travel. And then the third type is having some sort of mobile living. You see this with van life a lot. So you make your lifestyle, you make your home the lifestyle. So sailboats, RVs, and vans are the big, big type. And those are the low. And then you it becomes less expensive as you move down the spectrum. And then the cheapest way is to exchange your rent or mortgage, car payment, exchange that for travel expenses and have no home base. But that is more extreme. A lot of people start with a version of type one. So you keep your home and everything the way it is, but then maybe you go away for a month. Like you go, like a workcation is what I call it. And you just test it out. Well, two weeks.
I'm on that spectrum.
Yeah. And it's a nice way to dip your toe in the water and to feel it out. And it doesn't have to be extreme. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to be moving to Bali tomorrow.
Fantastic. And it's interesting because it also sounds like step two and three sound a little bit like what people are doing when they're getting ready to retire even. Because my parents, my mom's from Thailand and Laos. My stepdad is from Kansas, you know, not traveled a lot, but every summer, well, once he retired, she worked in the school system. And so every summer they would go back to Thailand for a month and then 2 months. And then they decided to buy a place there. And then when they retired, they moved there. So they're not digital nomads. They have a home base, but they have been able to travel around Asia and experience different things. And what I really hear you saying is that this is something, because I'm a little older than you, I'm Gen X, and I think I see my parents in that generation doing a lot of this. And I see a lot of people in my generation who want to do that when we're in our 40s and 50s. But I love that you don't have to wait. You can figure out how to do it now. Everything's so global. I mean, you are in Greece. I am in the United States. I have several conversations every week with people who are all over the world. And we have WhatsApp and we have all these apps and ways to communicate. And it makes things so beautiful. And so I want to see if you have any insight or anything you want to add to that. And then I want to talk about what somebody else will learn from reading your book. And you go through the history. Will they learn like these tips and tricks and how to get started as digital nomads?
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yes, there's a lot of history and stories, a lot of narratives. I want you to, whoever picks up the book, I want you to leave the book with the feeling that you have friends who are doing this and you heard stories and you saw like little windows into different ways that this can play out. There's also a lot of like decision making kind of matrices where, you know, you're not sure what to do about budgeting. Well, there's four tiers of budgeting. And which one do you fall in? Which one do you feel yourself falling into? And whenever something goes wrong, here's a checklist. Here's like a template. This is how you email and communicate. There's all these little things about planning and then reacting. And I lay out all the options. To me, that's what the book is. It's a list of options and helping you decide and think about what do you want now. And I think it's something that people can come back to because it's not like I have revisited many times. You know, I think, what do I want right now? Like, what, you know, and I go through these decisions as someone who's been on the road long term, and it's going to change. And it's supposed to. You're supposed to react. It's not like you're building this house or like you're going to a restaurant, you know, you like order everything out, you know, you're like, well, I'm just gonna order this and that's gonna be what I want. Like, you don't have to, like, you should ruthlessly edit what you want constantly.
Ooh, I love that. Ruthlessly edit.
Yes, I'm a big believer in ruthless editing of your life. And I think that's what retired people in that phase of life are really good at. And there's so much wisdom in that, like, pre-retirement phase, I think, in retirement, where people are thinking it's time to enjoy, it's time to have fun, it's time to focus on what matters. We hear that a lot, I think, whenever we listen to people who are downsizing and going in on, you know, the next, like, an enjoyable chapter of life. And yeah, there's a lot of similarities there.
Yeah. Nice. And what about when people want to have kids? I know I have a daughter, she's 15. So in 2 years, she'll be out of the house. So it would be easier for me to travel. And of course, I want to travel to visit her at college and university and everything. But is this a lifestyle that people can do when they have children?
It is. It takes different forms. I think very few people travel quickly with kids. I've seen many times that people stay for like 2 years in a location and they go somewhere specifically that has an international school and a community, and it has all that structure. And it's kind of similar to the military thing where you move to a new base every 2 years. That's the people I've met. It's constantly changing and there's new amenities, and a lot of people are doing world schooling or online schooling that they are nomadic. A lot of people raising kids on sailboats, sailing around the world. I didn't get into children in the book because that's its own topic. It's so deep, but there are so many different iterations. And in kids, I mean, the people I interviewed that grew up doing this lifestyle liked it a lot and it shaped them greatly. Rob Palmer, who was the nomad with the RV and the plug-in internet, I interviewed one of his kids who grew up seeing his parents do this lifestyle. And I couldn't interview him, but his brother has kids and lives this way with his daughter. So she is the second generation. She's three. She's the second generation of kids to grow up with their parents who are working remotely and traveling. And I think it's just going to be more and more normal.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like it. So if somebody wants to start, what is the one thing that they should do to get started on this journey besides read your book?
You should think about what you want to be different in your life. And don't just kind of paste your face on an Instagram reel of like this dreamy thing. Like, don't just imagine yourself cosplaying that. Think about, what do you want? Do you want to go somewhere hot or cold, somewhere like really different? Do you want something loud, urban, secluded? You need to think about, what is it that you're like craving in life? Because I was like, if you like live in New York City and you think, I want to do something really different, and then you go to London, I think you're going to be disappointed because you need that contrast to appreciate. And not that London and New York are the same, but they're similar enough. Like, what you're craving, I think almost always what people are craving is contrast. So what do you need? And how can you work that into your life now in little ways? Like, even if you never want to be a digital nomad, but you do work remotely, I would say look around your space and edit. Like, look at anything that makes you feel bad. Like, you know, like a pair of running shoes in the corner that you bought and you feel bad that you never got into running. You know, get rid of them. Is there a book on your bookshelf that you feel guilty you didn't finish reading? Like, this is one of my mottos: ruthlessly edit your surroundings to make you feel better.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's great advice, even if you are not going to become a digital nomad, just in life, edit, ruthlessly edit. So fantastic. And Kayla, your book is available at writingfromnowhere.com. And And it's available now. People can buy it on all platforms.
Yeah, it's available on all the normal places, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, online. But if you can, if you're interested in buying, I encourage everyone to check any local bookstores first so we can support those.
Yay. I love that too. Any last thoughts that you want to leave our audience with today?
Oh, if anyone is wondering if they should try travel or, you know, a little more adventure, if you're wondering, then the answer is yes. It's pulling at your heartstrings. So find a way. It doesn't have to be big or loud or flashy. Just find a way to feed that curiosity, because you never know where that's going to take you.
Fantastic. And if somebody wants to learn how to work with you and support your digital nomad lifestyle, is that at the same website or would they?
Yeah, writingfromnowhere.com. I'd love to talk about it. Yeah, I'm an SEO writer and help with content marketing. So I would love to discuss that.
Hey, awesome. And I always ask, and I didn't prepare you for this, so hopefully you have something. Do you have a favorite quote or mantra or motto that you live by?
One of the big ones that really pushed me to leave my 9-to-5 in 2017 was an Annie Dillard quote: how we spend our days is how we spend our lives.
Wow. So beautiful. Kayla, thank you so much for being with us today. I have loved learning from you. I can't wait to read your book this weekend. And we'll have the link in the show notes for everybody to be able to purchase it and learn more themselves. Because I think this is something, like we said, it's something people hear about, but they don't really understand the ins and outs. And so I love the fact that you not only show us the history and show how people have done it through the ages, but also talk about the four ways people can be a digital nomad and what they need to think about for each one of those steps. So
I'm so grateful that you had me on to talk about it. And I hope that anyone interested feels like it's a little bit more possible.
Well, I know I do. And thank you to everybody who's watching or listening to this episode of Your Brand Amplified. I will be back again with another amazing guest to share their story. And with that, have a beautiful rest of your day.
Want more? Check out amplifywithannika.com or follow me on socials at amplifywithannika.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As we close out today's episode, I want to thank Simplified again for making it possible. For all marketers and creators out there, Simplified is your ally in effortlessly crafting on-brand content with design and video AI. Discover how AI can enhance your creative process at simplify.com. Start for free and elevate your content game. Thanks for listening, and here's to your next creative breakthrough.